Okay.
Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 days. Keeve, we are past the halfway point. We are up to the number 16 team today.
Yeah, and people are saying, you know, you're going too fast. Doing two episodes, two teams in one episode, it's just too fast. Slow it down a little bit, guys.
All right, so let's slow it down. We'll do just one team today. Now, the problem is that we started in the wrong direction, right? We spent 32 minutes talking about the garbage teams.
Yeah, well,
that was our mistake.
Yeah, right. We didn't. Yeah, that is. I mean, we spent 4 minutes talking about them, but we had a whole episode, I guess, dedicated to them.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to spend 32 minutes talking about the number 16 team today, the Seattle Seahawks. And we're breaking all the rules. We're going one team, and we're also bringing in a guest today for the first time this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do we have a guest today, Akiva?
I think Superfan Robbie said, you don't have to guess.
The answer is because of the roommate rankings, but way to follow the pre-show.
Oh, no. The Superfan Robbie said, don't do guests, but you should still bring on his favorite, Josh Grashen. And so here we're talking the Seattle Seahawks with one of Superfan Robbie's faves, my friend Josh Grashen.
Well, this is going great, guys. I'm happy to be here.
I think this is Grashen's like seventh time doing this Seahawks preview, because he probably did two Seahawks previews with in the Ari Gold era, and this is year five of these, and he's been on all of them, I think. So this is probably his seventh time on.
Well, did you come for a playoff game or something once also?
Yeah, he may have been
when
more
the
than
Vikings,
that,
Vikings Seahawks playoff game, the infinite, infamous Blair Walsh game.
Back when the Seahawks used to make the playoffs, he used to come on during the playoffs.
They did make it last year.
Yeah, but we don't have guests on for the playoffs anymore.
The Seahawks still find a way to beat the Vikings every year.
Yeah. You know, Akiva, it occurred to me that how long we've known each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've known each other long enough that, like, we are really actually old people now.
We've known each other for over half our lives.
Yeah.
We started. It's only been up because it started with 9/11. That was the first week we were together.
You guys coordinated not showing up to work with the rest of the Jews that day, right?
And then we fled the country that week, and then since then it's really been uphill.
Yeah, uphill. I guess by those standards, that's true.
But we did in a WhatsApp group Chester and I are in. We did a roommate rankings of roommates we've had in our lifetimes, and Chester has had way more than me because he didn't get married when he was a teenager like I did.
And also, I moved away from home when I was 13.
Right, and
so,
you moved. Right, his parents kicked him out of the house when he was 13, for their own safety. And so,
I just want to know if I rank above or below your wife.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well above.
Yeah, you were above. You were above. You were my number one. You were my number one roommate.
The sex
all time
must have been much better. In ratio.
We did used to shower together, Josh and I.
Well, it was the only way to get you to shower.
Yeah. It's true.
And it was worth it.
Yeah.
It was worth some like partial nudity.
Yeah. Jen Chester was Chester's number one. And if you tweeted him, he'll tell you his whole ranking. Oh, I didn't know you roomed with Michael Gutman. When was that, Chester?
Just for one summer.
In the Upper West Side or in the Heights?
On the Upper West Side.
I don't remember that. Anyway, yeah.
Why would you remember something I did years before we met?
I don't know. I knew Gumman, so I'm surprised I didn't like know you through that. So Grash, the rest of my rankings are available offline, but you were my number one.
Okay.
All right. So
nice. I'm flattered.
The Seahawks, probably Josh, probably the biggest Seahawks fan in Columbus, Ohio. Is there a Seahawks bar in Columbus, Ohio? Is the city like big enough for that?
The city is theoretically big enough, but I have not even looked, and nobody here, people here are Browns or Bengals fans, occasionally a Steelers fan, but like really everyone's OSU fans.
Mm-hmm. And
the NFL is,
have you adopted the Buckeyes?
Nice side dish. Well, I do. I am getting a master's there now, so I do have a claim to it. But like honestly, I can never really watch the games, so I don't really care that much.
Yeah, Superfan Robbie not going to invite him back next year, Chester, hearing that he's getting a degree from OSU.
Yeah.
No. I do kind of like, he'll like this, I'm guessing, because honestly, there's like this certain pall that sets over the city when they lose, mm-hmm. and it's kind of crazy because it's like the 12th or 13th biggest city in the country. Mm-hmm. But like on a college game day, it's like the most unified place. It's really kind of nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they lose, there's kind of like this, I don't know, it's kind of funny to see how downcast people who like have no connection to OSU other than living here are.
It's interesting because growing up in New York, you don't have that, because even if like there would never be like a somber street after the Mets lost the game or even the Yankees, because so many people root for another team. You know, there's no cohesion in the city in New York or you know, Chicago maybe. I don't think they have that with the Bears, but like that's the only big city that has like one
team. No, for sure they do with the Bears and the Bulls.
Well, no, and the Bulls haven't been
good. And probably even the Cubs, because no one cares about the White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, all the Cowboys fans. It is one of the major cities with one team where that would even happen.
It's one of the few downsides.
I guess
of
it's a Boston
multiple.
Thing, right? There's probably, now it's such a weird scenario because they just keep winning that like they don't even notice if they like their teams are dead to them if they don't win a title. But I guess back in the day, like if the Red Sox lost a big game, I'm sure the streets were like that in like 1986 or whatever.
But no, but it is a thing that when you grow up in New York, you never appreciate, which is like the way an entire city coalesces around a team. Like when the Vikings are having a good season, every third car on the street has a Vikings flag on it.
Right.
Like the entire city just goes, like you go to the airport, every single person, like when you like check your bags, is like wearing a Vikings jersey. I actually think that's a standard thing.
Well, what about when the Seahawks lost the Super Bowl, John? I mean, you weren't in Seattle then, but you're from Seattle.
Yeah, well, so I haven't really lived in Seattle in so long, but because they really got good after I was already gone. Mm-hmm. Although when Holmgren came, it was like a big deal. But the Sonics were still there. And the Sonics at the time were the only team that had won a championship mm-hmm. in Seattle. And the Mariners were still good, like early 2000s, late 90s. But like now the Seahawks are pretty much the only thing. And I mean, they have Blue Fridays, for God's sakes, during the year where people wear Seahawks gears to work. And they never in a million years would have done that when I was a kid. So the Seahawks have become far and away the biggest thing there.
But I feel like there's a lot of people in the city who aren't from Seattle at this point. Who maybe didn't adopt. Although it seems like the Sounders have really been adopted by the whole city also.
Yeah, it's just because they're a bunch of hipster assholes who love.
So you're on the record, you're not a Sounder.
Wow, anti-MLS tech. Yeah. Well, because he's a fan of
the
Columbus
crew.
Union.
Save the crew.
Yeah, Columbus crew.
Save the crew. Yeah, I mean, I was glad that they did stay just because it's like, you know, it's another major thing that's here, but like, I don't really care. I went to one game and bored out.
And are you a Blue Jackets guy? Because you don't come from a city with a hockey team.
Yeah, if anything, I just never grew up with hockey, so it was really hard to, but like this year was exciting because I know they beat Tampa Bay or something in some historic fashion, and it was pretty cool.
Sounds like you were really into it. Josh, pop quiz, who's the mascot of the Blue Jackets?
Oh, no idea.
Didn't listen to our mascot battle. Let me ask you another question. As a fan of a team, I guess it's just you and the Astros and the Brewers, who, you know, your whole childhood was in one league or conference and then jumps to the other one in your adulthood. Like, which conference do you identify with more?
Mm, that's a good question.
Which conference?
I'm an NFC guy, I'm an AL guy. And, like, it'd be weird for me if all of a sudden the Vikings went to the AFC. But that's what the Seahawks did.
I think, for me, it's definitely NFC because they were...
Oh,
because
you're
irrelevant.
A bandwagon fan and you didn't care about the Seahawks in the days of like
Kurt
Warner. No,
they were just irrelevant until honestly, when I was a kid, the Seahawks were nothing. In
he was a Mariners
Seattle.
Guy. Also, when I met Josh,
what about in Alaska?
That was when the Mariners were. They don't really have a team, although I think they're mostly Seahawks fans, right?
Sorry, I missed that.
I don't think he said in Alaska.
I'm sure it wasn't important.
No.
Yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, well, so when I was, like, in the 90s, really until Mike Holmgren came, which I think was 97 or 98, like, people didn't sit home and watch games. They were mostly irrelevant. And then Holmgren came and people got into it, and then they made the Super Bowl, but that wasn't until 2005. But, like, they were pretty good. They at least would flirt with the playoffs most years. But there were also the Sonics and the Mariners were good almost the whole time. And the Seahawks were an afterthought.
I'm sure I've told this story on the podcast in 8 years ago or something. But when I met Josh, the Mariners had that really great regular season. I think that was the 114 win year, right?
116.
116, yeah. Sorry. And then so we called Josh Ichiro. That was his name. That was well, like that was if you saw him in the halls, yeah. he was like people called him Ichiro and then Each. Like that was nobody called him Josh because the Mariners were such a big deal. But I believe Stuart Gasner started that.
Yes, he definitely did.
Okay. Josh, you're a big Mina Kimes fan.
You know, like it's cool to have people from Seattle, certainly, but I don't. I wouldn't say I follow too many sports personalities anymore.
Yeah, Josh isn't a big social media guy. Also,
Akiva, I did not listen to Bill Simmons last week with Mina Kimes, but what did he say about Steve Largent and white wide receivers?
Oh well, someone mentioned Steve Largent, and Bill said I think that's the best wide receiver ever. So I was looking it up.
Yeah, Don Hudson is obviously the answer, but you know.
It's very the truth is they're very close. If you look at the numbers, it's not like a huge gap, but Hudson is definitely the answer.
I mean Hudson to me is the second best receiver of all time after Jerry Rice.
Once had a stat where you had Allworth ahead of him. Am I crazy?
No, I have Allworth 5.
Chester, do you actually still listen to Bill Simmons' podcast?
He listens every week.
Yeah.
He loves it.
Yeah.
Do you not find him to be like the most insufferable?
Oh, he
like,
is for sure.
Like,
but it's a hate
ass
listen
to rich people now. That like he's become an A-lister, and it's like I don't need to hear about your time at like Mark Wahlberg's summer retreat home watching the Patriots games or.
Yeah, the Bills. So although awful. I mean, you know, Bill Simmons again. Although he sort of successfully, almost in like a George W. Bush way, presented himself as a man of the people. Like he was always a rich little prep boy. You know, he went to prep school and he grew up like filthy rich. And
also,
he's like Bill Simmons 5 or whatever.
His parents like spoil you.
Yeah.
Jesse, did you like my Mount White receiver more, which was Hudson, Maynard, Allworth, and Largent? Is that correct?
It'd be Hudson, Allworth. Largent. I have them in my top 10, and then Don Maynard's 14.
Yeah.
So I guess he'd be next.
Well,
I
mean,
that's right.
I mean, unless you have Biletnikoff, but he's not that good.
Biletnikoff. No, if anything, you'd have Raymond Berry or Paul Warfield.
Raymond Berry, I guess. But I think Maynard is probably a little better.
I know for sure. Yeah.
So that's
Raymond Berry is famous.
Well, where would you have Welker then? Is Welker like seventh or eighth? He's got to be pretty high up there.
No, he's not. Because Welker's career, Welker, I have number. Yeah, he's not even in my top 100 receivers all time.
Wes Welker, really?
Yeah, because he was a nothing in San Diego and Miami, and he was a nothing in Denver and St. Louis.
His prime was still 9 years. It wasn't like he was done in 2 seconds.
I mean, I see him with 4 good years.
No, his prime is like a starter. I'm saying was 9 years because he didn't play at the beginning of his career. Like he wasn't even he was just a punt returner or on the bench.
I mean, he has 50 career touchdowns, so you know, he's not particularly relevant.
Josh, this is the stuff you're missing. I wanted to talk about the receivers. There's not much interesting to say about the head coach or the quarterback where we normally start with our guests because they've been the same for 8 million years. So Lockett and Metcalf, two sort of different interesting receivers. So Lockett, the famous stat last year, first receiver in NFL history who had a quarterback with a perfect passer rating thrown to him. How much of the credit there do you give Lockett, you know, who clearly had a much better year than Doug Baldwin, who fell off a cliff and retired, or is that just like Russell's becoming so good in his old age?
No, I think that Lockett is probably one of the more underrated guys in the league because he's really small and because he plays on the Seahawks, he doesn't get that many passes thrown his way. But I mean, when Wilson's passing to him, he is open. I mean, he has multiple yards of separation, and then even when it's close, he comes down with it, and he has amazing footwork. So like it's really both of them, but like Lockett gets a lot of the credit. I mean, he would come out of the slot and just like streak down the field, and he is much faster than I guess people think because he is open. And he also had I saw something that according to Pro Football Focus, he had the most fantasy points per target of any receiver.
And he also led the league in pass interference yards.
Yeah.
He had 70 passes only, which is very low usage. I mean, if you're a good receiver on the Steelers, you get 130, 140 passes thrown to you. 70 passes thrown to him. He caught 57 of them, which is a ludicrous percentage, for 965 yards and 10 touchdowns. So, you know, 57 catches on 70 targets is great if you're, you know, the aforementioned Wes Welker and you're catching them, you know, 3 yards over and trying to get some yak. That, you know, the average pass thrown to Doug Baldwin, if you count the pass interference, which these stats don't, is like every time they throw to him, it's an automatic 15-yard play. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, he really is he's amazing at getting, especially considering he's like my size. It's like, it's incredible what he does.
Yeah, and he got a really cheap deal afterwards. So they have him locked down for very cheaply for the next couple of years.
But it's also, to be fair, it's also somewhat a function of the fact that he is only getting 70 targets. Like, he's not going to maintain those rates if he's getting the ball thrown him 120 times.
And he's probably not going to catch 10 touchdowns. But
well, Baldwin had that year with, what, 14, I think, the year that Wilson went.
Yeah, that was actually, I think that was the year against when they made the playoffs against the Vikings. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to know how many of those are red zone. I don't have that stat in front of me. How many of his?
Oh, a lot of them were red zone. Yeah. Whereas Lockett, probably very few of them are red zone.
No, I'm talking about, Baldwin for sure. I meant Lockett.
Yeah, Lockett's touchdowns do not start in the red zone.
Well, Baldwin was one of those guys who his entire game was predicated on like his footwork at the line, and he was a great route runner, so he would get separation, but he wasn't nearly as fast as a guy like Lockett is. Not that he didn't have some deep balls every now and then, but that's usually because he just left someone like confused on a route. Whereas Lockett, they're almost all deep.
Let me ask you about the running back. So last year, you spent a first-round draft pick on Rashad Penny. He was a bust as a rookie. He gets supplanted by Chris Carson, who did they even draft Chris Carson?
Yeah, it was a last-round pick in 2 years
seventh
ago.
Round.
Okay, all right, yeah. So, you know, a day three draft pick. I mean, does Penny get a chance this year, or do we just sign him off, write him off as a bust?
Well, there's a lot of chatter that now people are saying that the Seahawks system is just not conducive to Penny's talents.
It's a good thing they spent a first-round draft pick on him.
They also draft a running back every year, because if they drafted a guy this year, they drafted, if you remember, CJ Procise, or Procise, however you pronounce it, was this guy a couple years ago. So four straight years they drafted a running back where, you know.
I feel like probably most teams probably.
But I can sort of answer my own question, which is what I like to do here, Josh. The Patriots and the Seahawks have mastered getting the supplemental picks because they're good and everyone wants to. One second. Does anyone not have their headphones in? Because
I do.
Oh, because I hear myself now, Alex, which I did not ever before.
That's mental illness.
No. Like I hear it's going to mess up your recording. Whatever. Yeah. So the Patriots and the Seahawks get a lot of supplemental picks because they're good, and then players sign their good players, and then they get extra draft picks. So they go into every draft with 10 or 11 picks, in which case, sure, you could afford to pick a running back every single year. Patriots do it too. Look, they did it this year. They picked Sony Michel really high. It's not that it's a waste of a pick. Bad teams like the Jets get 6 draft picks every year, so you can never pick a running back, which they don't. It's a luxury when you have the 10th pick. So it's like a weird thing that
the Seahawks
haven't.
Well, that's what they do every single year in the draft is they trade back and they accumulate more picks. They end up, even if they go in with 6 picks, they end up picking, like, for sure in the top 5 in terms of volume of picks. Mm-hmm. It helps when like, you have, listen, Pete Carroll has his flaws, but if there's one thing he can do, it's turn people into defensive backs. So he never needs to take anyone high who plays in the secondary. And so, like, he gets all these guys who are, like, reclamation projects who end up being good players in later rounds. I don't think they have a very good track record with first-round picks.
Yeah. Well, they're only first-rounders that they drafted on the team are Ifedi, who I think so far hasn't really worked out, right? The right tackle.
He's pretty bad. I mean, he's definitely
Collier, who's their rookie this year. And that's it. And Penny, but he's not even starting, and he's maybe on his way out anyway. But those are the only first-rounders they have on the whole team. And like you said, the secondary is Shaquille Griffin and Tedrick Thompson, Trey Flowers, all late-round picks, mid to late-round picks.
Right. I think Griffin was a second-round pick.
He was third,
But still, I think that, I don't know, they've never had success. I mean, they had Bruce Irvin, who is still in the NFL, still making a lot of money, but I think he's got one of those skill sets that never jumps out at you as being, he never has 10 sacks and he never has 150 tackles. So it's kind of like, what exactly is he? But it's apparently teams keep signing him. And that was the year of him, Bobby Wagner, and Russell Wilson, which is like pretty much an all-time draft just right there. But yeah, they don't. I wouldn't give up on Penny yet because he did have some flashes last year. Like, he does things that Carson can't do. But I think he needs Like, so far, the biggest thing I hear from, like, the reporters and stuff, who, you know, is that he can't break tackles in the way that they thought he'd be able to. And that was his big thing in college, was he was, like, led NCAA in broken tackles, and, like, that just hasn't happened yet.
So as a Jets fan, we universally hated Brian Schottenheimer. You're now offensive coordinator. How has the Schottenheimer experience been for a Seahawks fan?
Well, it's like a paradox, right? Because last year, Wilson had his most efficient year ever. They were ranked relatively high in, like, offensive DVOA. But, like, they lost their playoff game without a doubt in my mind because of Schottenheimer. Here they have, like, this amazing combo of wide receiver and quarterback, and they're going against, like, a great run team that clearly was there to stop the run in Dallas, and they just kept running the ball up the middle three times in a row and like, just looked pathetic doing it, and it was infuriating to watch. And, like, I don't know whether that's Carroll telling... I mean, honestly, like, let's be honest, Schottenheimer is there because Carroll wanted someone who would toe the line. Mm-hmm. And Carroll wants to be old school and run the ball 60% of the time. He wants to buck the trend because he knows that, like, right now he needs... The way he's going to win is ball control, and if we have the time of possession, you know, battle. And that's because that's what it was with Lynch and with that amazing defense. And he, like, got away from that when all the players started rebelling and then everyone would get hurt and the offensive line was complete garbage. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's what he always has wanted to do. And that's why he kind of cleaned house with offensive and defensive coordinators. He's gotten rid of...
I thought, like, it was because Daryl Bevel did not believe the 9/11 was an inside job.
I'd love to find out if that's, like, a real thing from Carroll.
Well, he had Jordan Peterson come speak to the team, which was a very weird move also.
Yeah, and he interrogated, like, some military guy who came and spoke to the team.
Yeah.
Once,
I feel like he, you know what? I bet Pete Carroll is, like, a diehard Joe Rogan fan. That's my guess. That he just, anyone who goes on the Joe Rogan show is
I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that assessment.
By the way, the stats of you mentioned the tough playoff loss last year, 24-22 in Dallas. They threw 27 times and ran 24 times. Except every time they threw the ball, they gained 10 yards. Every time they ran the ball, they gained 3 yards. 24 for 73, Chester. Chris Carson with an old 13 for 20 on the day. Rashad Penny 4 for 29, but it was all one run.
Do you guys remember, like, 1994, a Packers-Lions playoff game in which Barry Sanders
Yeah, of course. Everyone knows that game. 13 for negative one. Yeah, that's famous. Yeah. So what should you? How many times should you throw to Tyler Lockett? They threw to him 6 times for 120 yards. He caught 4 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of those were, like, at the end when they were down 10 and, like, the game didn't really matter. I mean, I think in the last two, you know, they scored a touchdown with, like, 30 seconds left.
But this is the most
better than it was.
This is the most conservative team in the league in terms of running the ball. They run the ball on first down by far the most of any team in the league. And that's got to be a Schottenheimer thing, right? I don't think that's been the case the whole Carroll era, but I could be wrong.
No. Well, I mean, when they had Lynch, it's what they wanted to do. They wanted to run as much as they could. Wilson was also young then, so they were trying to protect him to some degree. And they had the best defense in the league for, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years running. So, like, all of those things kind of enable you to do that. When your defense is, like, mediocre, and by the way, it's also a testament to Carroll that the defense is even mediocre, having lost all the players they've lost over the years. I think it's like his platonic ideal of how to run a team. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't have the same personnel, and he's trying to, like, fit it in with that. And I think that, you know, if all these guys progress 1 year like the way Carroll hopes they do, then, like, maybe their defense will be a little bit better. But it's kind of hard to imagine that being the case. There's a lot of rookies and a lot of young guys, and Shaquille Griffin has never really proven himself to be all that good.
Griffin, I think, is a lost cause, unfortunately. It's a great story. I don't think he's, you know, a starting caliber player, and I think they are pretty much coming to the realization of that. It's just a weird
he had a good rookie year for a rookie, and then he took a pretty big step back last year. So I don't know, third year, like, you know, this will be his make or break year to see whether he's going to get a big extension, is my guess.
What's the deal with Michael Kendricks? You have this weird deal where you have a very good player who might be going to jail or you know, something like that at some point this season, right?
Yeah, it seems like that they'll find out pretty quickly. I think he has his hearing in late September, but it is kind of a weird thing. And it's like a weird thing where it's not like a domestic violence thing, so you don't feel as dirty for having him on the team.
Sure,
it's just, you know, some light insider trading.
Yeah, nothing. Hoops among us has not done some light insider
trading. Yeah, I wish that I had the power to do insider trading.
Insiders.
But, yeah, so I think, he actually makes a big difference when he's on there. I think their run defense certainly suffered when he wasn't there. I think in week one, they lost last year to the Broncos, who were not a very good team, because they tried to start the one-handed Griffin brother, and he just looked completely lost. Like, and there had some big runs because of it.
Are you a member of the cult of Puna Ford, their maybe new young defensive star?
I mean, listen, I would not call myself a sophisticated enough watcher of the game to know, like, when a defensive lineman is really popping. Mm-hmm. But when you hear it as consistently as the coaching staff and all the reporters talk about, it seems that, like, they kind of I wouldn't call it lucky. I guess they knew, but, like, because he's undersized. But, I mean, he was an undrafted free agent, and they say that he's going to, especially with Jaron Reed, who was their second best defensive player last year after Earl Thomas got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially with him out the first four games, like, they for sure, like, he's going to play a ton. Apparently he's amazing at stopping the run.
This is a very young team, by the way. I mean, the only aging guys are the linebackers, right? KJ Wright and Wagner. Really everyone else, and Wilson's not super young, but he's got, you know, he's certainly in his prime still. It's a very young team up and down the starting lineups.
Yeah, they got rid of everyone who was getting paid a lot except for, you know, I mean, except now Wilson, Wagner. Those were really the only guys who were making a ton. And now they're, like, paying a little bit. Their offensive line, they're paying a little bit.
I think they paid the kicker and the punter a zillion dollars also, if I'm not mistaken.
They did sign a kicker. I think they were sick of kicker from...
But these things don't last. Like, he was the Jets kicker last year, and he was great. He went to the Pro Bowl. But, like, these things are very cyclical.
Right.
Like,
I know.
One blade of grass.
I thought it was a little silly.
Which
also,
is why the Jets knew. Like, listen, the Jets could have easily re-signed him. They weren't interested. And their kicker just retired. They could have used him. So Chester, do you know the wins total, the over-under in Vegas for the Seahawks this year? Do you have that number handy?
I do not. If I had to guess, I would say it was 7.5, but I have no idea.
No, if you had to, well, how about this? Google it, because your guess was awful.
No, just tell me then.
I don't know. I'm asking you to do some work.
But you said you knew. You said my guess is so awful. That means
Well,
you know.
I know it's not 7.5, because that's a bad team's over-under. This team is in the top half of the league. Is this your first day?
I mean, they're 16,
football?
So they're...
7.5 for the Seahawks?
You're so annoying.
Is Russell Wilson out for the year? Josh, back me up here. That's a crazy guess.
I mean, I would probably guess like 9.5.
All right, they're at 8. Oh, my God, what a terrible
seven
guess.
And a half
I was off
is
by
like,
half.
But that's crazy, and I'm sure the VIG...
They're at 8, Akiva.
The VIG
What's
goes
the difference
up?
7.5 and 8?
The VIG goes up, though. You know, like, I'm sure they're an 8 leaning to an 8.5, not a 7.5.
Okay, so I was off by half. Again,
that's a crazy guess though. 7.5.
I was literally off. I could
sucks?
Not be. It is not mathematically, humanly, physically possible, metaphysically, for me to be closer without being exactly.
Do you think, even. But I mean, answer my question. Do you think this is a bad team that you're guessing 7.5?
No, I think they're an average team, which is why it's 7.5. They're an average team in a division with a great team.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're an average.
Are they
going to
make the playoffs, Josh?
I think they're an average team with a great. With an amazing quarterback and an overall good coach. So, like, I would probably take the over because, you know, I think, like, they're probably right around 9 or 10 wins is, you know. Do they make the playoffs? I mean, they definitely, I think they could probably be a wild card. I don't know that they're going to beat the Rams, though they do get a home primetime game against the Rams, and they very, very infrequently lose those games. So they might actually beat, I mean, and last year they were very, they played the Rams incredibly closely, even in the beginning of the year before they'd really like found their groove. So a couple bounces go a different way, and they win. So like, yeah, I could see them with 9 to 10 wins, like pretty easily, I would say.
So just to pick that number.
The craziest moment in this podcast history has to be Akiva going nuts at me for being half
That's
a game.
That's such a weird guess, thinking. Though. Everyone's going to be on my side. When
I was almost
out.
Exactly right.
And,
I was closer than
Vegas
Josh.
Is
what
stupid.
You,
what a on. Dumb guess. Well, 7.5.
What would your guess have been? It wouldn't have been as good as mine.
8.5. It would have been exactly as good as yours. But it would have been better because I'm sure the VIG goes to 8.5 and not to 7.5.
No.
Wait.
We're spending a lot of time. We're spending a lot of time here, guys.
Josh, we have to kill time. This is, you know, there's a 32-minute show this year. We bomb at 32. Oh, boy. We're almost there. So, yeah, I have this team missing the playoffs, but I think they're an 8-8 team. Chester, what do you think? Are they going over or under? 8's a hard number because you push a lot.
I've grown to have this tremendous hatred of this team just because every single year the Vikings play the Seahawks, and every single year it's in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why. This year we're playing the Seattle. Vikings are playing at Seattle on a Monday night, which, as Josh says, is like very I just don't understand why this happens year after year. Mm-hmm.
You know what? There's always these things. The Seahawks always play the Panthers, and it's always in Carolina. It's like they almost have this rivalry because they end up playing each other every year. Somehow they must finish the same, you know, spot in their division every year. It's really bizarre. But I'm like looking at the schedule right now because they have a lot of like kind of gimme games at home, and unless Kirk Cousins